So good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Overseas Athlete Podcast. And today I'm joined by Travis McAveen, a basketball coach, initially from the US with a lot of experience overseas. So glad you could make it, Travis. Thank you very much for joining us.
Glad you guys can have me. I'm excited to be a part of this podcast and share my journey a little bit.
Yeah, well, I'll let you kick it off. I've done a bit of research. I try not to do too much because I like to just have conversations. But I can see you've coached in several countries now. So right. If you want to give us a bit of a background on yourself, on playing career, and then how you got into coaching, and we can go from there.
Well, this I just finished up my 26th year of coaching this past year. The last 5 years, I've been in the Dominican Republic. And then recently, about a month ago, accepted a new head coaching job in Cancun, Mexico, in the Caribbean Basketball League, which I will start this coming August. So it's definitely beyond a journey. But I finished up playing my college basketball in 1998, where I was an NAIA player and got into coaching right away and was real fortunate to get a head high school position. Then a year after that, be a very young head college coach. And it's just progressed forward over the last 26 years. I've been, at every level of college basketball. I've been a Division I coach, NAIA coach, junior college coach. And then I started my professional coaching journey in the summer of 2012 in Taiwan. So, my basketball career is very diversified, and it's been interesting to say the least, but exciting at the same time.
And was the plan always to get into coaching? Obviously, you don't look extremely old to have coached for 26 years.
Well, I'm 47 years old, and that it's always been the mission and the goal. Once I got done playing college basketball, I knew I wanted to get into coaching right away, and I was very fortunate and blessed to get around the right people to give me an opportunity. And obviously, winning is what gets you to progress wherever you're at every level of basketball. But stay very active and keep myself physically fit and in shape. And it keeps you young. You have to keep up with all these young guys anymore. So I do my best just to keep myself active so I can keep up with the Jones.
I did see your LinkedIn post, I think, this morning of sweating it out on Mother's Day, doing a workout this morning.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that I always enjoy doing, but once you get done playing, you have to keep yourself active, and it's a good way to, relieve stress. And because the basketball coaching industry and profession can be very stressful at times and very demanding. And exercise is just a great way to kind of maintain a healthy lifestyle.
Switch off a little bit from it, sort of switch the brain off from constantly thinking about basketball and work.
Right. I try. Yeah.
So going back then, that's obviously, so when people think of basketball, they think of America, right? NBA, that's where it's at, and college basketball being huge. Was that always your dream of, to coach there and coach in America? And then how does an opportunity in Taiwan, of all places, come up?
Well, I mean, after I got done coaching at the Division I level at Coppin State University in Baltimore, Maryland, I decided to get back closer to home, be closer to my daughter. And at that stage, some minor league opportunities came my way at that time in Columbus, Ohio. And I was, fortunate to have two really successful years at that level. And in the summer or spring of 2012, I was named U.S. Minor League Coach of the Year on Eurobasket, and that's what landed me my first opportunity to get a head coaching position in Taiwan. And originally, I was supposed to work with Kobe Bryant's dad, Joe Bryant, at the time as his assistant, and then he ended up not taking the job that summer, which kind of fell into my lap. And Kobe Bryant's always been, one of my favorite players of all time, so I was disappointed I didn't get a chance to work with his dad. But it also gave me the opportunity to get my first head coaching position overseas at that time. And I've kind of just ran with things since then and been given a multitude of opportunities to coach at different places.
And had you ever been outside of the US before you took on this role?
That was my first time being overseas, and I got my feet wet really quick because during that summer, we got a chance to compete against all of the Olympic national teams throughout the Middle East and Asia during that summer. And, it was definitely beyond satisfying as far as getting the opportunity to compete against some of the world's best players on that platform. And everything was televised that summer on Fox Sports. And, it definitely gave me a different mindset on how basketball is played globally, not just here in the States. I had to learn everything from rules to regulations to different style plays and, in different countries. So it definitely, made me wake up real quick to the world of basketball and how it's played differently in different countries.
And how did you go about that? Was that just hours and hours of study, just watching videos, or how did you sort of learn?
Growing up, you get a chance to watch the Olympics, Pan American Games, World Cup, World Championships. And I think, I thought I did a pretty good job of knowing the concepts and, learning FIBA rules versus college basketball rules or, NBA rules. So I was able to pick up on things real quick on, when and how to call timeouts and, as far as, goaltending and the paint and the lane being widened compared to what it's like here in the States is just that the basketball being a FIBA basketball versus a Wilson or a Spalding or whatever. So it's just a whole different feel that I had to get adjusted to back in 2012.
And the move itself, did you have an agent or did the club just contact you, or was it Kobe's dad that contacted you to sort of take up this opportunity?
What happened was, is when I was, named 2012, minor league coach of the year, it was just a foregone conclusion that position was offered to me by the committee. And at that time I was, named our USA Jones Cup men's national team head coach, which, fast forward 2 years later, when I got, out of the head coaching role and into a general manager role, then that's when I got a chance to get to know Sam Mitchell, which coached the Minnesota Timberwolves for a while and the Toronto Raptors and was NBA coach of the year. And I was able to be responsible for hiring Sam in the summer of 2014 and got a chance to work with him for a few years. So it's just, it's been, that's kind of was my start, as far as being overseas and getting those types of contacts and getting to know those types of people.
Yeah. It's networking. It's so important, isn't it? It does open so many doors for you.
It is. And it's all about right place and right time. And I think, a lot of people are, I think sometimes they're not driven or they're not crazy enough to, bang on doors long enough to allow themselves to get some opportunities and take some risk and take some chances. And I was able to do that and it paid off.
And coming down to that point, it probably means dealing with rejection as well. No doubt, there's a lot of no's before you get the yes's.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I was able to have a lot of success as a head coach at an early age. And, I think sometimes, basketball can humble you at times when you're not making the kind of money you want to make or, not in the situations where you kind of envision yourself being at that time. And, sometimes a lot of people don't realize whenever you get into coaching basketball professionally overseas, it doesn't always pay the bills and you have to have other jobs and other occupations to go along with that in the off season to pay your bills and, make ends meet.
I was actually going to be, I've had this conversation actually, last season on a few episodes where there's footballers, from a soccer point of view, like that, chasing dreams in Europe, but the money's just not there in the big leagues, so they might find remote work or part-time work to support that. So did you go through the same thing on your first move?
Absolutely. I mean, I, you know, in 2008, you know, I started my own, you know, basketball and fitness training company here in Dayton, Ohio. And even during that time, I was actually also doing work for the Special Olympics in Ohio, selling donation bins to companies and corporations to do marketing work to make money and pay bills to, at that time, take care of myself and my young daughter. You know, my daughter's 19 now, and she plays college volleyball at the University of Cumberland in Kentucky. But at that time, she was young, and you know, the pay overseas and the pay with basketball during that time when I first got started coaching overseas, it wasn't a whole lot of money, and I had to do, you know, two and three, and sometimes four jobs to make the money that I wanted to make to pay bills.
Yeah, I love that. It shows that it needs to be done. You know, if that's your goal and that's your dream, then, you know, you have to make sacrifices. You have to do other things. You train outside, obviously, work hours to make that happen. That's amazing.
You do. A lot of people don't realize that. I call it people are in their hoop dreams. You know, sometimes they think that their first professional job, whether they're a player or a coach, that's going to be the end of all means, and they can, you know, support themselves and their families and make a living. And it's certainly not the case. And I wish more and more players that are fresh out of college understand, you know, how to manage money and save money and invest and be smart about how they are trying to make a, you know, chasing their dreams. Because sometimes it takes a lot of, excuse my language, you know, eating a lot of shit to be the shit. And a lot of times people are not willing to do that. So they, you know, they quit, they give up, and, you know, they end up working a 9-to-5 because they're not willing to make the sacrifices that's needed to make it a career.
Yeah. And it can come at any time. Like, it's just people that make, you know, you got it early, but like that, you're working several different jobs to make it happen. I think, especially with social media now, a lot of people do think that you come out of college, you sign with the NBA, you're on, you know, $10, $20 million a year. It's all great, right? But there's so many opportunities around the world outside of that. And that's what this is all about, is sort of highlighting them. And it might be difficult, but there's definitely a light at the end of the tunnel, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, a lot of people just don't have any understanding of the pay structure. I mean, for example, right now, I mean, the new pro league that I'm working, getting ready to work in the Caribbean and in Mexico, you know, our salary ranges with, I'm allowed 3 imports, but each player, their salary will range from $800 a month to $1,500 a month that will pay for their apartment and their food. And it's really an ideal job for somebody that's trying to continue their playing career somewhere different, or somebody fresh out of college looking for their first job. You know, so it's just people have a misunderstanding of sometimes what certain countries pay as far as salaries for their imports overseas.
And I guess sometimes, like, for your point of view, trying to sell that to a player, is that one of their best chances of getting, like, real life experience in a professional basketball league? Your money might be less, but it's that next step up the ladder in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, you know, one of the players that I'm highly recruiting right now, his name is Matt Bengaya, and, you know, Matt played for Joe Mazzulla, which is now the Celtics head coach. You know, Matt started his career at Southern Mississippi and then finished up with Joe at Fairmont State, and actually started his professional career right out of college in Luxembourg, and was making pretty good money and really just messed up and wasn't focused and didn't have his mind right. And this is kind of they have The Last Chance You on Netflix. And, you know, this is kind of like sometimes the overseas version of that, where this is kind of sometimes a player's last chance to get it right. And a player like that, you know, Matt's African, and we're working on trying to get his passport, African passport, so we can get him over to play in the Ba League in Africa, because he's born and raised in Africa. So it's a transition, could be a transition for him to have a great summer with me in Mexico, and then that transition to getting into the NBA side of Africa and make really good money. So,
yeah, Yeah, no, it is amazing, I think, when you start looking into it, that there are, as you said before, whether it's coaches or players, there are so many opportunities out there. You just have to sort of go and find them. You need to get a bit lucky. Obviously, you've got to work hard, but they are there. You know, they definitely are. It's, if you don't make that first jump, there's definitely a lot of side steps or even backward steps to, you know, to take you forward again.
Absolutely. I agree.
And what was your own personal experience like then in Taiwan in regards to settling in and living there and the language and actually getting used to being a head coach in a foreign country, you know, for the first time out of the US?
It was a big adjustment because I, at that time, knew absolutely very little Chinese language, and, you know, that's Chinese Taipei. And so it was very hard for a while to get around and go to restaurants and talk to hotel people and, you know, just learn your way around on a daily basis. And, you know, are you familiar with what commodes are? So commodes are, yeah, you know, toilet seats that, you know, warm your rear end when you sit down. And that was an adjustment. I had never sat down on a toilet seat that, you know, that warmed your ass when you sit down. So that was kind of like, whoa, what's going on here? But that was an adjustment, and just the beds being smaller and the showers being smaller. And it just was a big adjustment. But I love basketball so much, so I really adjusted real quick because people in Asia really admire, you know, U.S. basketball coaches and players. So they were very welcoming, and my experience there was phenomenal for the three years that I worked, actually 4 years that I worked, in Taiwan, two as a head coach and then two as a general manager.
And does that come, just one thing you mentioned there, coming, say, to the US or, into Asia from the US, does that come with added expectation because, you know, the US is the country of basketball?
I think there's a lot of expectations and pressure because they look up to us. So they're, you know, constantly wanting to, you know, base their basketball skills immensely upon, you know, how we play and how we, you know, operate playing the game on a daily basis. So, you know, it was very, I wouldn't say there's a lot of pressure, but it was more of you had to be on your A game at all times as far as, you know, coaching on the floor and being able to adapt to the expectations that were put upon you.
And over the past probably 6 to 8 weeks, I've actually posted a lot of articles on a lot of the subjects you've just touched on there. Mm-hmm. So if I could dive a bit deeper just into how you personally handled that change of one environment, you know, smaller showers, smaller beds, not being able to speak the language. Like, how did you personally overcome these things? Was it just your love of basketball that drove you through? Surely it'd be some difficult days there.
Absolutely. I mean, there's times where obviously you miss your family back home. I don't care if you're 35 years old or 45 years old. At the time, I think I was 35 years old. And absolutely, it was more of, you know, this is what is going to, you know, lay the foundation for me to either progress and get more opportunities in the future or not. And I think that I, that in itself made me step up and adapt real quick because I didn't want to fail. I mean, failure was not an option. And so that was my mindset from Jump Street, is I want to win as much as possible and make the most out of this situation so I can, you know, further my career moving forward.
Did it feel that way a little bit going, say, leaving the US, going to Asia, if you do fail? That sort of really puts, I guess, like a bad mark against your name going back to the US. Did you feel that type of pressure?
Absolutely. I mean, because you can, no matter how much talent you have on your team, and at that time, you know, we were competing against, you know, Olympic national teams, and people don't realize how talented, like, the Philippines national team was, and and China and Iran and, you know, places like that, Japan. I mean, there's just, I could go on, you know, as far as the, you know, the level these guys are, you know, in these countries, you know, making millions of dollars, being pros. And we as Americans sometimes think, oh, we're just playing against foreign countries. But it's at that time, it was their country's best players. So, you know, some of these guys, I mean, you know, a lot of these teams have been playing for, you know, 5 and 10 and 15. They grew up playing basketball their whole lives together. And that was the challenging part with taking at that time some of our best American players to compete in that type of an event that's, you know, nationally televised on Fox Sports and ESPN and you know, having maybe 2 weeks of training camp and going out and competing against those national teams to represent your country.
Yeah. And how did you find your own communication skills then working with players, you know, not of an English language? How did you sort of battle that?
That I was very fortunate. Really every, you know, all 8 countries I've been in, to have a translator. And at that time, you know, I had a gentleman by the name of Jeff Joseph, there in Taiwan, that was my assistant coach and was my translator, whether it be in game or pre-game press conferences and post-game press conferences. He was definitely a buffer to translate everything that was being spoken to me in Chinese. So it was, you know, I was very fortunate to have that, you know, that sidekick to be able to function, you know, during practices, during games, after games, with the media, etc.
Did you feel like you could get, obviously in a, say, a press conference or just a chat, you can probably get your message across, but with the team and how you want them to play and I suppose showing them your passion, did you feel that came across through a translator?
I think yes, because when you're in a timeout, you obviously have your clipboard and you're trying to draw up plays and get your point across. And people, you know, pros, I mean, these are professional players, so they understand, you know, X's and O's, but by all means, I think they definitely feel your passion and your love for the game. But having a translator, it would not have been possible to get what I needed out of them or wanted out of them during that time without a good translator to say, hey, this is what the coach wants, this is what we're going to do, and being able to go out there and execute it. So I was beyond fortunate.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's a good tip probably for people moving into other countries if they're chasing contracts, coaching, playing, whatever it is maybe to hire one, maybe get one on your side just to help you settle.
And some more, you know, some organizations will and some won't, but I think that's all part of, I call it contract negotiating, whenever you're talking with a club. And people don't realize when you're dealing with, you know, I've been in the Middle East coaching, I've been in Europe coaching, I've been in the Caribbean coaching, and I've been in Asia coaching. You'd be amazed on how many people in those countries are English fluent and speak great English. So it was sometimes it's not as challenging as what you think, depending on what part of the world you're going to. I mean, if you're going to Germany or you're going to Spain or, you know what I mean, most of the Middle East, people are very English fluent there on a daily basis. And sometimes if you don't know that, you know, you just assume that everybody speaks a foreign language wherever you go, and that's not always the case.
And how did you find, when you touched on their contract negotiations, how did you find them throughout different countries as a foreigner? Did you feel quite comfortable in what they were offering and what you wanted, and you were able to come to good resolutions quite easily?
Sometimes it's challenging, but I think you have a mindset, okay, I need to make this dollar amount per month. I'm used to making this back home and to be comfortable during that time. And there's also, you know, if depending on whether you have an agent or don't have an agent, you know, currently I don't have an agent. You know, sometimes when people don't realize when you are basketball coaches, you're giving up 8% of your salary when you take on an agent. And as a player, you're giving up 10%. So that's something a lot of people don't understand. And not that I would never, I mean, if I were to ever get, you know, a big time job overseas or even NBA, whatever, giving up 8% is not a big deal in the scheme of things if you're getting the contract you want. But if you're not making an overabundant amount of money, there's no sense of having an agent unless you really your ego is that bad where you gotta walk around and say, oh, I have an agent, when you don't really need one all the time.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of players, I think these days, just feel good about it. They just feel good saying, well, I have an agent, you know, this is my agent. Well, in the scheme of things, in this industry, there's really good agents that do a whole lot. And there's a lot of bad agents that just talk and don't do anything for their clients. So it's kind of, and it's the same way with coaching. There's really talented and good coaches. And there's a lot of coaches that don't deserve to be on the platform that they're in. But I'm just a big believer that your results speak louder than words. And I think your body of work is your body of work. And people don't win championships and have, you know, successes if they're not doing the right thing. So they wouldn't be in the industry that long. So I just take it with a grain of salt, you know, and take it case by case when I'm, you know, dealing with that situation. But most owners are pretty cool about negotiating with you what you're going to need. And also doing things on incentive basis, you know, getting bonuses, whether you win conference championships or league championships or, you know, coach of the year awards, whatever. There's a lot of things you can add to your contract that if you don't ask, you don't get it. So, and I'm the type of person, I've never been afraid to ask. If I get told no, I get told no, but I'm not afraid to ask.
That's it. That's usually the worst that can happen, isn't it? Is you get a no.
Right.
Yeah.
And I call it being aggressive. I think some people are, you know, they'll say, you know, Denzel Washington years ago in training day said, are you a wolf or are you a sheep? You know, and it's like, you got to be one or the other. And if you're going to survive and, the world of basketball receives, you've got to be a wolf. You definitely cannot be a sheep, or you'll fail. You'll get stomped on.
Yeah. So competitive. Like most sports, when you're going overseas, is just, you got the locals who are trying to make it, but then you got the imports who are trying to make it somewhere else. So that it's a sort of dog eat dog world, isn't it? In any sports.
You hit on a good point. It's Chris, it's cutthroat, because you could sign as a player a contract, say you're making $5,000 a month. And if you're not producing the first 2 weeks or a month, they'll send you home. And the same thing with coaching. You know, I've seen coaches get sent home after half of a season or a month because they're losing basketball games and not really vibing with management the way they should and satisfying their end of the contract. And that's just the way it is. And when you're in a foreign country, you're under their rules, not your rules. So you kind of got to really be, you know, have your guard up and understand that you've got to win. You know, if you don't win, you're getting sent home.
Yeah, because like that, when you come in as a foreigner, whether you're from the US or you're from Mexico, wherever it may be, Australia, we've got a lot of, you know, good basketballers now. I think you have to be that little bit better than, you have to definitely be better than the locals. And you have to keep that level and that standard up. Otherwise, as you say, it's easy to just get rid of you and bring in another.
Absolutely. And that's just, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I think that's that way. I mean, obviously college basketball is a little different because you might have a 2-year contract or 3-year contract. And if a school gets rid of you, they have to pay, they have to buy you out and pay out your contract. Overseas is completely different. You know, so I think it's just, you know, players have to really, you know, I wish players would do a better job of trying to educate themselves straight out of college, Chris, on, you know, how things operate from a business standpoint and how to have longevity overseas.
Well, you've obviously done that. You've been coaching for a long time. You mentioned you've been in 8 countries now. So what have you been like, some of your best experiences in certain countries, like the good and the bad? How have you found it?
You know, it's beyond a journey to say the least. But I think every country that I've worked in, you know, has a, you know, special place as far as the pros and cons to whether you enjoyed it or not enjoyed it. But you know, by all means, you know, I think that the Caribbean has been, you know, nice, you know, because I enjoy the weather, I enjoy the culture. You know, obviously it's closer to home. And obviously the lot since, you know, I mean, Dominican Republic, I've had the most success, you know, so far overseas and winning, you know, winning the most championships and things of that nature. But, you know, I think Asia definitely created the most challenging part to my overseas coaching career, because I was, you know, playing against the world's best at that time, you know, being coaching against Olympic national teams, teams that were fighting year in and year out to qualify for the Olympics. And that's just a whole different level of competition. That's to take nothing away from different countries' pro leagues, but when you're dealing with national teams, it's a whole different, you know, a whole different animal.
Yeah, well, as you say, it's the best of the best, isn't it, when you get to that level?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And from a, just say from a young coach starting out, or even a player who, you know, is maybe in their mid-20s, they're not making it in the US, is there anywhere you would recommend them to go as a good place to start to get experience? Given your experience in 8 different countries, is there anywhere you'd say this is the best place for someone to start with to get an experience of an overseas competition?
I do. I mean, you know, obviously where I'm at right now in Mexico is a great situation. That's why I'm really excited about it, because it allows me to tap into college basketball players that had really good or great careers at a small college that didn't get the recognition that they deserve or the opportunity to get drafted into the NBA G League or even a big time job in Europe. It's a great start for a player to look at a country, you know, like Mexico as their first job, you know, straight out of college. That would be my recommendation to a lot of players. Dominican Republic's a good place too, but you know, I think Mexico is in my opinion, would be a good first job for somebody fresh out of college.
As you say, it's still fairly close to home. You probably got a lot of English-speaking people that can help at least settle. So it's not like you're like that. Moving to Asia, you know, straight out of college would be a huge culture shock.
I think the biggest thing is people, they watch sometimes too many movies and too many TV shows. Like they watch Ozarks on Netflix and they think that, you know, that it's that you're dealing with the cartel and different people when you go to Mexico. And I think you can find trouble anywhere, but I think that, yeah. At least the part that I'm in now, in the Cancun area, it's very tourist related and it's close to the beach. The weather's beautiful. Even where I was the last 5 years in Santiago in the Dominican Republic, you're an hour away from the ocean, you know, and there's very little violence going on. And at least my experience is I never had one problem in 5 years. You know, coaching and working in the Dominican Republic ever, walking around town, you know, getting a cab or getting an Uber, you know, going to a restaurant, you know, interacting with people. I think if you go looking for trouble, you're going to find it. But, you know, I think for the most part, Latin America these days are pretty safe and they treat American athletes and American coaches pretty damn good for the most part.
And with just going back to say Mexico being a great starting point, for you to now have the ability to bring, you know, college kids over, are you heavily involved in the recruitment? Do you do a lot of research, or do the club bring players to you, or the agents contact you all the time? How does a player sort of get in touch with that sort of opportunity?
I mean, obviously you probably follow me on LinkedIn and different social media outlets, but as a head coach, I have the ability to bring in, you know, three paid imports this upcoming season, and it's who I want to bring in. So obviously, you know, being in the industry for 26 years, you have a lot of contacts, a lot of connections, a lot of ways to find players and get players. But it's amazing sometimes when you brand yourself and you network on different social medias, people will find you and send you game films, and then different agents, ton of agents will reach out to you. I got this player, I got that player, not just American players, Canadian players, African players, European players. An import's an import. I don't care if you're, you know, you could have one American, one African, one Canadian, it doesn't matter. And I like the fact that I can have three paid imports on my team. And most head coaches are going to balance that out and sign a point guard, sign a big time score, and sign somebody that can rebound and, you know, play inside. It's not rocket science when it comes to, but me personally, you know, I'm a different animal when it comes to my style and philosophy on basketball. I've always been a real up-tempo, fast, aggressive kind of coach that likes to play really fast. Nowadays, you see really the only extreme team in the NBA that plays that way is the Indiana Pacers, which I'm from Indiana, so it's actually really nice to see the Pacers playing that style. But I grew up idolizing the Jerry Tarkanians of the world at UNLV and the Nolan Richardsons at Arkansas and the Paul Westheads of Loyola Marymount. I grew up, you know, idolizing those teams as a kid. And then when I've got, you know, as soon as I got started into coaching, I've immediately put that into place as far as the way I like to coach and play the game. It's a fun way to play, but you also got to find great athletes that can play that style and be up for that type of play. Cause it's not, you know, a lot of players think they're in great shape and can play that style and a lot cannot. So you got to find big time athletes that can play that way. And that's just, the longer you do this, you're not going to change your philosophy and style. And I am who I am. I'm 47 years old. I'll be 48 in September, and I'm not going to change who I am. I think for the most part, I think I'm a player's coach, but also, you know, I got to find players that are going to fit my personality as well. That's the hardest part of recruiting, is sometimes finding players that fit your personality the way on and off the floor.
That was my next question, actually, was obviously you've got the input and you know what you're looking for from a, you know, from a basketball playing point of view, but then how important, and it obviously is important, but how much work do you put into, the person's personality, their attitude, if you think they're going to be able to settle in a foreign country and, you know, not get homesick after 2 weeks?
Right. I mean, that's why sometimes it's not that I'm totally against getting a kid straight out of college, but I like to mix it up where I've got a little bit of, you know, a veteran presence where, like, for example, I just mentioned to you a guy that's coming, that I'm trying to get in, that's 28 years old, that's been out of college for a few years. He's already played overseas. You know, he's, you know, played for a coach that's playing in the NBA right now, or coaching the NBA right now. But also you've got to, you know, I think find young men, or men, I shouldn't say young men, but men in general, that have the personality that they're not going to get homesick and they're going to be okay being away from mom and dad for the first time, even though they're fresh out of college, they're used to being at home and, you know, still being coddled by mom and dad that are still paying the bills and growing up real quick. Cause it, you know, overseas, it's just you, you don't have, anybody but your teammates and your coach to fall back on when, you know, when things get rough and hard. So.
Yeah. And I think, as you say, having that older experienced player can probably help you, but then help others settle in. He's been there. He's done it before. He's 28. He's probably got a lot of life experience. So it's a good strategy to have.
Yeah. I mean, some players, they don't get it till later. You know, they've had some, you know, accolades coming out of college and then, you know, got humbled real quick because they either got fired from a job or let go from a country. And they understand that this is their last chance to get it right. And those guys are easy to deal with because they got a chip on their shoulder and they're hungry to get back to that level where they once were. And that's what makes it great. You can be that person to give them their last chance and give them opportunity to go kick some ass overseas. So,
yeah. And do you come across the other side of that? Obviously that's the players you want because they're driven, they're determined, they want to prove people wrong, which is great for a coach, obviously, because, you know, a lot of the work they'll put in themselves. But do you get the other side, and how do you handle that where you've got a young American with an ego that's like, I don't want to play in Mexico, I want to play in the NBA? Do you come across that a lot, firstly?
All the time. You get guys that are, they'll be so fixated on what they did in college, or they have an agent telling them how great they are and they deserve this amount of money. And at the end of the day, I say, well, if you were that great or you were that good, you wouldn't be trying to get a job at this stage of the spring or summer, you know, and this time of the year is interesting because you've got Portsmouth going on, just got done. You've got the NBA Summer League is coming up this summer and different, you know, free agent camps and things like that, that players will go to try to earn a contract. But I just tried to eliminate that by just talking to players and be real with them. This is what opportunity I have. This is my experience, and be straight up with them, you know, tell them the truth. And if they want to be a part of what I'm doing and want to accept the pay that I can pay them, then great. And a lot of guys sometimes will big time you and say, well, thanks coach or whatever, I don't want it, I'm going to move on. Then they'll call you up a month or two later and say, wait, is that opportunity still available? No, because I've moved on and it's a business. Yeah. It's never personal. And that's why I tell guys, like, I'm trying to win and get guys that want to be a part of what I'm doing. And, you know, I don't blame anybody for wanting to try to get a bigger payday or get a better opportunity. But I'm certainly excited about the direction that I'm going in and the people that I'm working for. And I think it can be a good platform for a lot of guys to get great experience. And then that can lead to a better job, whether it be somewhere else in Mexico or Latin America. For example, I mentioned Matt's name, Bengaya. You know, I feel like we have a good shot to get him over to Africa into the new Ball League. And that would be just such a great story. Mm-hmm. If he can execute that and make that happen. So I guess I got to put pressure on him to be the poster child, but you know, it's a good pressure. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what you want for players. You want them to use your league as being a platform to getting a better payday. That's what it's about.
Yeah. I say this quite a lot to people in the fact, because obviously my background is football and it's the same as basketball, where it is a team sport, you know, don't get me wrong, but it is also an individual pursuit, because you're the one that wants to go through the levels. And as great as it is having an amazing team and coach, like, as you say, if you're earning $1,500, $2,000 a month
right.
in Mexico, but you go, I want $10,000 a month, you know, so I've got to work hard. I've got to leave behind, you know, these guys that have become my brothers, but you have to push yourself.
I think, you know, there's different levels of players. I mean, and obviously the types of players that I'm able to get or are, you know, Division I throwbacks is what I call them, that went overseas, didn't make it, and they're looking for their last chance. Or, you know, I'm looking at really successful small college players that just need the exposure. They haven't got the opportunity to get seen on that level yet, and this is going to be a great first job for them. And I'm okay with that. I mean, I'm not going to get guys that played at Michigan and Duke and Arkansas and Syracuse. I'm not going to get those types of guys because, you know, they're going to make, you know, close to six figures going to Russia or Italy or Spain or Germany. And I'm cool with that. You know, I think it's just there's levels to the overseas game and you know, what pays what and you know, where you got to start at and where you want to finish at. So,
as you say, just getting that exposure, you might find that you've got a kid who has the potential of these guys earning $100,000 a year. He just right. needs that chance. You know, he just needs the chance.
You do. And some guys humble themselves and they say, you know, I mean, people don't realize, you know, for example, Mexico is an example. You know, you can play all year round, Chris, in Mexico. There's so many different leagues. If you really wanted to stay in Mexico and play 2 months here, 3 months there, 1 month here, you can make a good living doing that. But, you know, it's sometimes being gone that amount of time away from home is not for everybody. It's challenging as a coach because you miss your family and you know, you're missing out on some things that you are normally used to doing back home to better yourself and, you know, provide for your family.
And something you touched on, and I'll sort of finish up with something that's a little bit off the court, because it's an area that we do like to educate people in, is that financial side of financial education and financial management when you are Absolutely. Traveling around. Have you found from your experiences, like, you don't have an agent, as you said, but do the clubs help in that regard, or who helps the players in that regard of being able to save money, maybe invest money? How do they find the right people to do that?
I think It's a great question. I'm just now at a certain point where I've allowed myself to get educated the right way on, you know, high yield savings plans and CDs and things of that nature that you can invest your money in here to grow your money here. And I try to do a good job of getting to know my players, you know, away from the court, and allowing them to understand that they just to save their money wisely and some different ways they can supplement their income in the off season to take care of themselves. And I tell all the players, and a lot of guys I get, they didn't graduate from college, they didn't finish their degree. And I think that's so huge. You know, I try to encourage all the guys that I've had over the years, if they didn't finish it, to go back online or whatever to get that, because basketball is going to end eventually. And unless you're getting into coaching, you got to find something to do to have a career. And it's a lot of players, no matter whether they're 22 or 30 or 35, sometimes they think they're going to play forever and they didn't take the time to get their degrees and educate themselves the way they need to give themselves a chance to be successful in life away from basketball.
Yeah, no, it is very important. You see too many people sort of finish their careers and they've got nothing to move on to, no money in the bank, and they're basically starting again.
Absolutely. Chris, where is home at for you?
Australia. So we're on the Gold Coast, Australia, yeah.
So I got a chance to it's funny, I got a chance to work with one of the top agents in New Zealand. Her name is Leanne Barrett. It's interesting, but she's always promoting Australia and New Zealand basketball. Mm-hmm. And New Zealand, I obviously competed my last year when I was in Asia at the Jones Cup in Taiwan. Their men's and women's national teams competed there, and the basketball is very competitive and pays well in New Zealand and Australia for Americans as imports. So it's kind of cool that you're from that area. It's very much a football,
it's very rugby. Much a football, cricket, rugby country. Basketball is getting huge though, like especially I think because we've got so many Australians, especially now in the NBA right. and in the WNBA and through the college system. And yeah. The NBL over here is getting bigger with bigger imports, bigger Absolutely. TV deals. So it seems like it's going in a very good direction. We've got Scottie Pippen as the face of the NBL this year, which was big that. As well. So, yeah, he came out to do the launch. I went to a local game a couple of months ago, actually, just a preseason thing.
Right,
and they try and put on a show. You know, it's more than just a game. It's a sort of day out. It's engaging and entertaining.
For anybody that I've known that's got, I've had a couple of players that have gotten a chance to play in Australia. They loved it. They said it was amazing. The atmosphere, the culture, the people, the weather, loved it. So I mean, that's just amazing. That it's great to hear that basketball is growing at such a high pace there in your country.
Yeah, huge. It really is, and you do see a lot of Americans come in now and play in the NBL. And I think for the same reason, it's a very good league, and it's hopefully a springboard for them back to to potentially the NBA.
Absolutely, yeah. This is good stuff. Sometimes you come across people like yourself that find different people, and it's always great to go on different podcasts and network, because you never know who's going to introduce you to somebody in the future that's going to make your life better. So this is awesome.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for taking the time. As I said, the idea around this is to get perspectives from people that have, that have been down that path overseas, find out what challenges they come across, so that, like that, if there's a young US basketballer now thinking, what do I do next? Hopefully, right. If he listens to this, he might reach out to you directly, or he might take some of your advice and start looking. And that, for me, that's amazing.
Absolutely. And if you have a link or whatever from tonight's or today's, it's morning where you're at, it's night where I'm at. If you send me a link to your podcast, I'll make sure that I post that on all my social media for people to watch and, be able to watch your show in the future. And then maybe people on that watch the show today have the ability to and I encourage anybody to reach out to me, via social media or email or whatever. And you're more than welcome to pass my information out, because you never know who can benefit from me and vice versa. you know, in the game of basketball. So.
No, 100%. I definitely will. I'll add all your socials in, and I'll let you know when I'm going to release it and post it. And no, that'd be fantastic. But again, Travis, awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much for your time. Very informative. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Will do.